Workshop, September 18, 9 a.m., Annual Reviews and Dockets.
Because that's the question, man. Ultimately, I want it to unclick. Which is good. All right, we're talking about this.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning. Good. We'll go ahead and get started with the work session here. So, go ahead, Al.
So, good morning, Commissioners. This is a work session to prepare the board and basically recap what the Planning Commission has done with the 2012-13 annual review cycle. This is a program in community planning whereby we review site-specific applications by individual property owners and also docket items or issues that have come up that we need to amend to comp plan or code, in which case there is no cost associated with that, the board access to the board. So this year we have about 11 or 13 cases that have been before the Planning Commission. They've made the recommendations to the board for your consideration. So we're going to go over those issues. We have two hearings scheduled starting September 24th, and the last hearing will be October 8th. Typically we'll come to the board in November, December, and then the action of the board becomes effective the following year. Because of the application which the board is familiar with, Smith Ruth, we are trying to do our best to see if we can complete the annual reviews on a much faster track, if you will, to enable Smith Ruth to come in and proceed with the application. So what I will do is turn it over to Jose, who is our project manager on the annual reviews, to go over all the cases that have been before the Planning Commission. There are some that has issues. We will discuss those with you and get direction, or at least inform the board what those issues are, so that you're familiar with them as we come to your hearing. So, Jose?
Like Albert said, we're going to have two hearings. There's a total of 11 items on the docket, between the annual reviews and the dockets. Three of them are property owner initiated requests. There's eight county initiated dockets. Five of those are arterial atlas amendments. There's two urban holdings and one amendment to the tax facilities financial plan. We're breaking it up into two hearings. The hearing next Tuesday is going to have seven of these items, the five arterial atlas amendments, the capital facilities financial plan, and the one urban holding number one. The October 8th, we'll have the second hearing on three of the property owner initiated requests, and then we'll be 10th. And then on the 15th, we'll come back on the consent agenda with sort of a wrap up of the adopting ordinance. So this is the cumulative analysis, essentially. This kind of covers the three annual review items. The urban holding is essentially removing the urban holdings of the underlying zone would take effect, so it's not really a change in zone. The one decrease of MX is usually a combination of residential and commercial. So the 88.5 acre lot or gain of residential is really more 14 acres because we assume that 80% of it would be residential, so that would be 70. So just to clarify that a little bit more. And there should be, of those 88.5 acres, the proposal was not to have any commercial. We suggested there be some commercial, so there probably going to be about 5 acres of commercial, and I'll speak to that a little bit more as we go along with that specific one. Here we are. Next brief, SJO is a proposal to change the comp plan zoning designations on 88 and a half acres along 99th Street. This is east 5. East of 503.
Yeah.
Between 503 and 937. The proposal was primarily to do residential. We tried to keep the same amount of lots that would have been created with the 80% under the MX, so it ended up with an R175 and an R18 is about 11 acres of R18, and the Planning Commission was suggested that they retain about 2 to 5 acres for some commercial along 99th. The applicant's representative talked to the applicant. They were working on a developer's agreement to keep 5 acres. I think they wanted a community commercial, so it's a little more intensive use. And they also wanted a little more flexibility in terms of where to locate the commercial and the urban medium. So as long as it's not abutting one of the existing residential, I think that's the way it's worded in the agreement, and you'll see that before the hearing. Planning Commission voted 4-0 to recommend approval on that.
I have a question. Isn't there a guiding principle, or aren't there goals that we are trying to attain? For instance, the overall direction of, are we trying to make Clark County a bedroom community for Portland, or are we making provision for us to be able to provide jobs in our community? If you're going to do that, I would assume that we would provide land for jobs rather than consume what's already been designated for residential.
This is a much narrower look at this property. Currently, it is MX in terms of what the current designation and zoning is, and it allows for some percentage of that being residential and some being also commercial. And this is what we do in terms of when we prepare the plan that was put together in 07 is to balance where rooftops and jobs are going to be, and we accomplished that in the 07. This is a request to further take a look at this, and the property owners have made a request that we consider a different mix that will still be consistent with the overall goal of the plan. So that's why we're looking at this and making some recommendation that will return some commercial on the property. So it's not inconsistent with what was adopted in 07. That would be my response.
The short answer to your question is yes. Yes, there are principles that guide it. There are principles, there are goals, there are strategies within them, and they're all within the comprehensive plan. So if you look in the comprehensive plan, it has all of that in there. It talks about exactly what you just said. And then it breaks it down from kind of the goals and principles levels to strategies and then implementation on the ground. Like, how are you going to do that? How are we actually going to make sure that we can do that? And then we get these site-specific requests from a landowner that says, well, I don't like the zoning I have. I want to change it. And then we have to roll it back up the hill to our plan and say, okay, well, is it consistent with what our plan says? And can we still do exactly what you said? Can we still get those jobs in here and make this change? And recognize that, okay, well, maybe they're going to come in and they're going to say, well, it's not because of the residential around it, and there's commercial on 99th as well, just at 503 and on 99th. They'll say, well, you know, it doesn't make sense to have this mixed use, this, you know, mix of jobs and housing here. Let us do it differently, and we'll get you some jobs and get the housing as well. But there are absolutely principles that guide all of this, and they're contained within the comp plan. Those flow from the countywide planning policies, and the countywide planning policies flow from a discussion with all of our jurisdictions. They have to.
If I might, do we have a larger picture of where this
could you zoom out?
Because I'm picturing 99th Street and St. John's. So we're on 99th Street east of 503.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know, kind of SJL, in the back of my mind, I'm looking up there, that must be St. John's.
I didn't want to ask the question myself.
And I can tell you, we might be able to provide you with
We need it. Yeah, give us the contextual
yes.
of what's going on there.
And I would ask also.
We have the staff report in a week before the hearing. There's also the Planning Commission. The staff report for the Planning Commission is on the website, so it has more detail, but you'll get a staff report that has a broader picture.
And so one of the things with the larger picture, it would show the other commercial property around there instead of all residential, because my first glance was. When I thought it was St. John, I was picturing the mixed use or commercial zoning in the middle of residential.
And the other thing that will be one of the requirements to make the change from commercial to commercial is the applicant's supposed to address sort of a market analysis and to show that there's either sufficient or insufficient amount of commercial, and they've provided that. That will be included in your staff report as well, so you can see what the commercial is in the area.
Sure. Well, first of all, I would think that if there are guiding principles are supposed to be concise, short enough to be able to put on a placemat in front of us, to be able to, because if they're not that simple, if they're really not guiding us, then we could easily deviate from it and not know it. So I would think that anytime we would consider these changes, we would really need to do it in that context.
When we get done here, come into my office, and I don't know if you've noticed or not, but I have like two big things on my wall. Those are the principles and values, like one line for each principle and value.
That's good.
And I put them on the wall specifically for that exact purpose. So they're still up on my wall in the big tablets. I mean, they're basically, those are the guiding principles, because we hadn't done that before. We hadn't actually done exactly that and said, like, let's have some simple guiding principles to, that take us forward. So anyway, it gives us a starting point for when we go through our next round.
So we need to move your wall into here and put them up on
Get them. It's a lot of work.
Put them up on the screen. That would be the first part of any one of these kinds of agendas that we have. Let me ask you, when it comes to the number of jobs or the acreage per jobs, the way it stands now, and the number of residences that were the way it stands now versus the way it's proposed. Do you have numbers on those?
You have the net change in acreage. Yes. Do you have the net number of jobs in housing?
We have the number of the dwelling units, not the jobs.
Can you do that?
Jobs. Yeah.
That'd be great to see.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
If you know the acreage and you know the type of jobs acreage it is, you know how many jobs per acre it is.
Right. Right.
And then the number of residences.
Right. We have that thing already.
Yeah, and I think they submitted
Okay, well, I would. Okay, we would need those parameters. Okay.
Except if it's all on the record.
Good possible.
It's there somewhere, but it's not here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, the Planning Commission got all that information. They made a recommendation based on that information. Mm-hmm. And you'll get that information for the hearing.
Okay. I'd like to get it. Actually, I want to work with you behind the scenes so I can do my homework ahead of time. So that I am informed coming from a position of knowledge rather than being student out there when I'm trying to make big decisions.
Sure. Okay. So this is the map that just shows the area in light blue would be the R175. The area in red would be the retention of commercial, and the dark blue is the R18. And like I mentioned, sort of not locked into those locations and want a little more flexibility on that, and so we're crafting the developer's agreement to reflect that.
What are we looking at?
This is the same site with the area in light blue would be the retention of would be the R175, the dark blue would be R18, and the red along 99th is the 2 to 5 acres of commercial.
It shows the zoning surrounding it, the R15, okay. R110, all of that.
Okay, that brings up that's a pretty good example of another problem that we still need to solve, and that is that so much of our land has been designated for jobs ends up being looking like this, where it's really not available because it's critical lands on it. The question is, have we gone through, and do we know the number of acreage, how much acreage is actually set aside and available to develop in a practical way for jobs?
We have a work session on the vacant buildable lands models, not only how it's built, but the acreage and everything else that will answer exactly that question coming up
October 9th.
So we will be able to answer that question for you very clearly.
Great.
On October 9th.
Okay.
And there is an analysis in the record as to how much of this is developable
right.
or not.
Based on. And the answer is yes, we have that, but we need to show our work and so on.
And if I understand correctly, the last comprehensive plan update set aside X number of acres for jobs. In reality, it's much less than that. So we have probably a deficit of what we without knowing. And so
well,
I'm looking forward
to
that.
Talk to you about that. Yeah, because that's actually not true. But
okay. Well, I'd be glad to learn that it's not true.
I will conclude that when we come back in the work session. I think the board made in 07, they took what I would call an aggressive policy to have more land for jobs in the 07 plan. And although some of the land were taken out due to appeal and other factors, but I don't think the plan, in my conclusion, is we had more land designated for jobs. Had we not been appealed and those land removed, it's still safe to say that we have, through the work that was done in 07, balancing tax base was one of the issues.
Okay.
But we'll come back on October 9th.
So, on October 9th, we'll get all of that.
Okay.
You know, that work. Sorry for kind of reshifting, but I want to make sure we have time for all the sites and cities.
So. So, the next one is 139th Street and Gaynor. This is the Fred Meyer in Sam Creek. It's about 3.8 acres. Currently, the zoning is light industrial, and the proposal was to go to community commercial. They had already received a site-specific approval for, there's an existing automotive use there. They have approval for another sort of general automotive use, and storage facility. So there was going to be a lot of loss of jobs, so we thought the change to commercial made sense. Here, the Planning Commission recommended approval. 10th Avenue and Bishop. This is 10th Avenue 219. Originally, the proposal was about 14 acres to go from R5 to CR1, which is the current CR1 is this area in here. The Planning Commission
got excited.
added this area to the north, about 20 acres. We had been originally in contact with the city of Battle Ground and Richfield about this proposal. There's about 14 acres, but there's some constrained areas on the west side, so the amount of sort of developable area was lot less than what's really showing in the total acreage. We have an interlocal agreement because of the sewer agreement that we contact them and have some considerations when we're looking to do any rezoning in this area. They were okay with the original proposal. And
the original proposal is the red.
The red, yes, sir. So the Planning Commission added these five additional parcels.
Did those parcel owners ask to be included in the change?
This,
or did the Planning Commission do it on their own?
At the Planning Commission, a couple of the property owners did come. The property owner closest to 10, the most adamant for the change, they felt that they had purchased the property when the state was still considering where they were going to run 219 to get to the interstate. So they feel they're they sort of dodged that bullet, and now there's going to be commercial next to them. And so they just didn't think that they, what they purchased, they were going to be able to get.
What about all those landowners with those nice big estates just in the north?
So this is, it's an old ag cluster. So our idea was to limit it. I mean, we didn't consider this area primarily because of discussion we had about Brown and Richfield, and it was a site-specific request. Additionally, there's a sort of driveway in here that we thought, and it's kind of a tree area that would be sort of a natural buffer between the commercial and the existing R5. So we thought that would be sufficient. There wouldn't be as much protection for these folks up here if you move the commercial here.
When we got a letter from Ridgefield asking us not to.
Ridgefield and Battleground.
The purpose of the letter was that they had talked with our staff on the stuff in red and said, yes, we can sign off on this because it's limited. They're super concerned about consolidation of parcels, and all of a sudden they have large-scale commercial in Duluth that takes away from people wanting to go to Battleground or people going to Ridgefield, which is fair.
So I guess I'm going with that. Their concern wasn't for a buffer along the residential area, more along the lines of don't get too carried away outside your urban growth.
Right.
But this is a rural center here that you know we're losing our rural center.
It's not a rural center. I mean, it's this CR1 Duluth is recognizing commercial outside of a rural center.
On the south side of 219, we have several, and then we also have the State Department of Transportation putting a huge facility there that I guess would be commercial.
Functionally, it is, but it's not a commercial.
It isn't.
So basically, Ridgefield Battleground just wanted us to keep it to the red and not add anything, is what they were asking.
Yes.
I'm concerned. We've lost two businesses south of 219 on the east side of that road because their zoning wasn't tweaked just quite right. And one was a sporting store that our zoning didn't fit. And
sporting store?
Yeah, there's a sporting store, a fisherman and whatnot.
Intent?
That's what he wanted to do.
The
zoning didn't fit. It was just one tweak away, and to think that we're already losing rural centers, we're missing opportunity for business. And this person wanted to expand, so he didn't expand.
I wonder if this was before or after. Remember, we did some changes to the CR1. We made some changes to make it more flexible for kind of rural commercial. I wonder if this was before or after that.
My concern is that if it's not a rural center, that it probably should be. And also the proposals that we have just south of here, our Discovery Corridor. And I think that we're recognizing that, so I don't think that we should put sideboards on to stop us from promoting that Discovery Corridor. We have other problems besides this. So, and just comment that it's either going to be a Discovery Corridor or it's not, and it's also a main sewer run to promote that growth and whatnot. And I understand the concerns of Battleground and Ridgefield, and the strange that Ridgefield is so concerned because they kind of sprawled out there across the freeway. So I just have a problem when we start putting sideboard on us and turning away businesses that want to locate here for whatever reason.
Well, the requests, everybody agreed on. Battleground, just to their credit, Battleground and Ridgefield did send us stuff saying that they were okay with the actual site-specific requests in this proposal. Mm-hmm. The only thing they were concerned about is Ron Barca, on the Planning Commission started getting excited about, well, let's just make it bigger. Let's just do bigger stuff and add more land in there that wasn't in the original proposal. And that's when the cities said, whoa, wait, we haven't, that's
A question. So the it looks like there's four or five lot owners to the north of that section that the Planning Commission was considering. It wasn't clear to me, do they want, which way do they want it, their portion, their lots?
They wanted the commercial that was being proposed for the lots to the south.
So each of them?
All of them? Yes, that's definitely that property owner. This property owner, I think there's a home here, he owns both lots. From his testimony, it was, he thought he was okay living there close to the freeway. Didn't think it was very noisy or didn't have much concerns, but I think he wanted essentially, if it's going to go commercial, he wants the flexibility.
So there's no opposition from the lot owners there to go to commercial?
Just from the cities and inevitably from the landowners to the north.
Right. Yeah. And we did hear from this property owner, one of the property owners
of the state.
Mm-hmm. What of the ones we heard from, they...
Okay, so they're good with that. If we were to make sure that we're good neighbors and consider all that area that the Planning Commission is recommending for to turn that land into jobs land, could, as part of this solution, provide for or require a buffer that would protect the neighbors from on the north side, so that we have trees or something in there that basically ensures that we're not changing the character of as perceived from their side?
When a development proposal comes in, that would be one of the requirements. If this changes to commercial and we get a development application, Marty's group, when they review it, will ensure that typically there's a setback and a buffer, and they would have that. That would be a requirement.
To plant tall trees.
Yes.
That would shield it.
When you bring it to us, bring property owners, not just the ones from the red, but some testimony, make sure that we have that called out for the property owners, that what they want of those five property owners, as well as what the zoning can do, because this is RC1. As we think in our heads, it'll be commercial, it won't be commercial, it'll be rural commercial one, which is incredibly limited because this is in a rural area, and it's not even a rural center. If it was in an urban area, you'd have a lot of flexibility about job types. You don't with rural center or just rural commercial. By law, you don't have nearly as much flexibility. So we need to know what those zones offer as well.
What's the process? Do we have the freedom to designate this as a rural center?
We can study it. I think you can study it twice now, and the recommendation was not to include the loop as a rural center because, again, it doesn't fit the GMA. It doesn't necessarily meet all the requirement that it be commercial, like central.
Can we get the commissioners information on Lammerts and the local areas of more intensive rural development, which were what we commonly know as rural centers, and they're very limited in scope and in which ones you can even have. And they're a vestige of pre-GMA times. They were allowed under GMA only because they existed before GMA, but creating new ones or adding to existing ones is ridiculously difficult. But we'll get all the information on that.
I know that what we've had there before, there's a tavern there, there's a gas station there, there's another business south of there. Mm-hmm. South of there we have a grain store. So, I mean, it has all the appearances and operations of a rural business center. And I'm surprised it's not. On the other side of the street, we have a hamburger place that's been there forever. Right. And then we have a mini mart with another gas station. And it's amazing that we're not. And then on the other side, again, we're having a big DOT yard. So it's something we'd probably should be looking at and considering.
Commissioner, we'll take a look at that again. Not to level the issue, but what we were looking at then, and I think the criteria was very specific, a community, a church, a different type of character, not just a commercial piece, and recognizing that as a local center. Yeah. But that's why we need...
Not to get hung up on it, though. It's something to look at. I think we
have a regulation to be...
It'd be good to look at. So can we at least
look at that, get some information back about the opportunities, the challenges with that, so that we as a board are all, you know, that we have all of that?
I wanted to answer Commissioner Madore and you, Commissioner Stewart. Yes, that can be looked at. No, it cannot be looked at in the context of the upcoming hearing. That would be... Right. Way too significant of a deviation from what the original application was. So that's certainly something that the county can look at.
Okay. And aside from the preferences of the adjacent cities, do we have the freedom to accept the Planning Commission's recommendation?
To
include the northern half?
I think that that's a policy decision that the board would make.
So we have the freedom, the legal freedom to do so.
I believe so.
Okay.
Okay, next is Fifth Plain Creek. Proposal is to remove urban holding. The underlying zoning on the entire area is R175. The proposal is to break it up into R16, R110, and R120. I'll show you sort of a map of that. There are some transportation issues that we've been working on with the proponent, working on a developer's agreement. The Planning Commission voted 5-2 to recommend approval, contingent on the prosecuting attorney's review of the development agreement. I don't know if you want me to get into more details about this or...
Actually, we've been kind of inundated over this piece over the last week, so
we know everything about this one.
Over the past week. Well, we'll say it.
Yeah. We've gotten lots of information. Inevitably, it sounds like you guys are working on details that you're able to bring to us. And again, a week ahead of time, be able to have all of the details hopefully finalized so that we can have our information in our book.
While we're talking about this piece here, I think one of the things that we need to move forward with, and that is the concurrency policy that we're considering adopting that would answer a lot of questions in these pieces. So,
yep.
Okay.
So this is just the sort of proposed area. So the areas C and E are the R16 proposed designations. A, B, D, F would retain the R175. The area in red would be R120, which would cover existing Monet's Garden, and the area around it would be R110. This is a shot of 182nd Avenue and a proposed realignment to address some of the issues at 182nd and 500 Point Blank. And this map also included in your packet. Northeast 50th Avenue, proposals to remove urban holding. We looked at originally 100 acres along 50th Avenue. Planning Commission again voted to amend and include 100 acres to the north. Subsequent to the Planning Commission hearing, we had two work sessions. We wanted us to come back to you if there were any sort of fatal flaws with the transportation analysis. There'll be an analysis including a packet from Steve Schulte's group. There weren't any fatal flaws that couldn't be addressed through sort of the normal development concurrency review. So there's still existing sort of medium term issues with the area and provision of sewer that that'll need to be addressed at some point in the short term.
One of the things I remember about this is that only 50% of it was buildable.
Right.
So it's misleading when you say you're going to rezone 100 acres. It's only 50% was buildable. So.
Yeah.
Commissioner, we're looking at the client. This is not just one grade. If you add the EP to the north, that brings the total to about 200 plus, and out of that, maybe about 100 of that is usable.
And would that be information you bring back?
Yes.
I would think that on any of these considerations, that we would always include the overlay that shows the critical lands. Because it doesn't help us to just look at the rectangles and assume it's all buildable.
We'll have that information.
Okay.
And just like, and not just that, but like visually, when we see the maps, I'm going to be able to see the layers and
yes.
run through two or three different visualizations of here's the zoning, here are the environmental layers, so that we can actually have a full picture of it.
Oh, so the last is the capital sites, our national plan. This was to include the Fairgrounds master plan. It's going to allow us to use REIT for debt service payments, and the planning commission voted 6-0 to recommend approval. I'll turn it over to Mike to walk through some transportation.
That's just a question. Aren't we already using REIT for debt service payments?
We are, but not for the event center.
Oh.
It's not on the capital facilities.
Okay.
This will add it to it, so I'll have it in camp.
Okay. That sounds good. Like paying off debt.
Well, we actually did this. And we asked about the REIT. I asked about the REIT and whether that was sustainable based on, we'd seen some real downturns in the REIT. I mean, it was destroyed. But because of the increases they've seen and what they're projecting now, this should be sustainable to be able to pay off that debt.
Great.
Okay, the next area. Interest is the arterial access amendment for Northeast 47th Avenue. This is the industrial park north of Minnehaha. The existing road section is built as an industrial street.
This is Cold Creek area.
Yes, my bearings here.
Yeah.
Okay, 63rd industrial on the south end.
Yeah, 63rd. Okay. Cold Creek industrial, like that. That's all.
Isn't that the street. Food bank there?
Food bank's in here. Yeah.
Okay.
And the proposal is to change all of this to an industrial street. It's currently a collector with bike lanes, and in doing design work, there's a lot of constraints in the northern section where we have a capital project to build this up to 78th Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly constrained in terms of grades and right of way, and the industrial street classification fits the function of it much better than that.
Did we? What did we ever decide? We had all those arguments about it dead ended, and there were people, you know, Coal Creek Industrial wanted us to vacate. Remembering pieces of the discussion.
Yeah, that's over on this side.
That's
where
the
they
side.
Are trying to get
okay.
rid of that road. Connection.
Yeah, where they're trying to get. Okay,
right.
Good. That's
yeah.
not this.
No.
Good. I don't want to surprise you.
That's
all right.
So, is the proposal include that northern section to make that look like the road on the southern section?
Right. When we build it, it should end up eventually looking
okay.
like the
and
road on the
and that accommodates trucks better
right.
and pedestrians and bikes,
yeah,
right?
Well, and that'll help out with Omega. Isn't Omega on the northern edge of that as they connect?
AOT gas is up here.
Right.
And
Omega. That would help Omega have better access.
Omega's on the border.
There's a companion project to improve the intersection of 78th and 47th.
Right.
To align the entrance to the Public Works Operations Center. So as truck traffic goes north, they'll have a much better intersection mm-hmm. 78th Street. So
okay, more about Omega.
That looks
I
good.
I was picturing it differently. I was picturing it coming out farther to the west, but it comes out there by DOC.
Yeah,
right
at the railroad crossing.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
And that works out well with the railroad.
Yeah,
corridor
to the east.
Okay.
Okay. Next one is a series of changes at Ward Road and 172nd Avenue. The list is there. There's about five different reclassifications. The here's the northern part of the area. So
yeah, I'll never agree with that. You know, I will never agree.
Well, all I need is two votes, I guess.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure what.
No, I'm just saying.
I'm not sure what your objection is.
The original
plan adopted years ago, I mean before 2001, would have shuffled all the traffic that wants to go north and east onto 172nd Avenue.
Yes.
So they have to go north and then cut over in front of the high school and the elementary school and make a left turn in the middle of Hawkinson.
No.
Yes.
No.
Okay. That's the existing.
The existing, the way that you guys are going to force it, is you're going to force the major arterial traffic to go along 182nd, which is right by an elementary school, and the little area of downtown Hawkinson that will be destroyed. And you'll have children walking by the major arterial traffic, and then the minor arterial traffic will go on 172nd, which is a straight shot, doesn't have the curves and the sight distance hazards that 182nd has. So you're going to push all the traffic down 182nd instead of 172nd, and that's why you did the little, that's why Pete pushed for the little bridge project that will end up pushing people down 182nd. He got his two votes for it, so that's the way it's all pushing out. But it's, for me, it is absolutely, you have set up a conflict by having a major arterial traffic going right by an elementary school when you could have had it going down 172nd, which is a straight shot. That makes so much more sense.
So where? Because when it gets up to...
Where does any of this go?
When it gets up to 159, you have to turn right and go right through Hawkinson.
Once you get north of Hawkinson, where does anything go? Yeah. It goes into the woods.
Yes, but it doesn't go north of Hawkinson. 172nd is not 179th, 172nd goes through a jog if you want to go north of Hawkinson.
But there's nothing north to go to. Ultimately.
That's why it makes no sense to shuffle all the traffic over there, because it has to go over back to 182nd to go where it wants to go.
Let me get caught up with you. The proposal that you're doing here with reclassifying the 172nd?
Yeah, they're making it a smaller classification. They're making it a less intensive classification than what it was.
It is exactly the same cross-section, but
Why is it necessary to do that? You know, people are like water. They take the path of least resistance.
Yes, they do.
And right now, today, it kind of splits some of the traffic. Mm-hmm. It kind of gets some of the traffic off the Ward Road. So I'm not understanding the need to change from what it is today.
Well, when they put that light in, it's like, it is like water. When they put that light in at Ward and 172nd, they diverted the water. So that more of it would go on 182nd, because it's a harder, you have to take a left turn to get on 172nd where you can go straight.
I thought we just made it safer for those desiring to make a left turn.
Because that's one way of looking at it.
That's what I understood at the time.
We should talk to John Matson about that. Well, he has a very different opinion.
Perhaps we should listen to the Federal Highway Administration, who told us, don't build it the way we originally planned, because you are going to kill people out here. Mm-hmm. They told us to go back to the drawing board and don't let design be determined by popular whim, essentially.
Or topography, or alignment, or anything else.
It may not convince you, but 88% of the traffic uses Ward Road 182nd, because that's where they want to go. Only 12% of the traffic uses 172nd.
Now?
It would be.
Because the water has diverted. And it worked. It did exactly what was intended.
If you wanted to use 172nd, you
could
go ahead.
This is a minor change. I just think it's a simple change.
Apparently. We're not going to have a discussion about facts. We're going to
talk about what John Matson said. I gave you facts.
Well, so what is the need to do what we're doing? What's the need for making a minor change?
All right.
That's a good picture.
What's the one we want to do?
Ward Road has no classification. We treat it like it's a back road, nothing. And there's... Right.
Going to be a major arterial.
Yeah, there's 18,000 trips a day on there. Right now, you couldn't get federal dollars to make any improvements on Ward Road because it's an unclassified nothing in our arterial atlas.
Can we break it down? Because if we're talking about the whole thing and we're skipping around, we're not able to nail down these pieces. So what you just said there about upgrading Ward Road is that I want to see what we can get on the same page. Are we in agreement that makes sense to so that that's available for funds to upgrade it?
Having a classification for Ward Road makes sense. What I won't agree to, because I do know the area, and is that because of the site distance challenges that you have, and because of the ingress egress in the area, and because of the schools and everything else that are there, they're all packs, by the way. Because of all of that, making that a major arterial is you're creating hazards. You are creating ingress egress hazards at higher speeds. But the agreement, I think, is absolutely you should have some classification for that so that you can create a safer space. Because right now you're not going to be able to qualify at all. So that's that I think we would all agree to. What they're asking for is they're asking for the change on 172nd. That's, I think, what they're asking for, though, and then adding...
Well, it looks like you got multiple changes on the same screen.
Yes.
This section here...
There are three on this screen and two on the other.
Okay, so this, what I want to be able to do to help us make progress is to take the components and see what can we all be on the same page. And so this upgrading ward road here, its classification, allows it to receive for improvements. We're not talking about increasing the speed limit. So isn't it already 50 miles an hour there with some caution speed a little bit less around the curve?
For that section?
We're a major collector.
There you go.
So you're not talking about changing the speed limit?
No.
Okay, so it's just widening it, making that portion of it safer.
We're not even talking about making any improvements to it.
You're just
at this point in time. It's changing the classification such that it would be eligible for.
Okay, so which sounds like, are we all on the same page? Does that make sense?
I don't agree with the classification. The classification sets the capacity, and ultimately it sets the framework for what the road will be, what it holds, and how it moves.
What classification would you recommend?
Minor, but we can't do rural minor there because of the work that's already been done down at the bottom.
Okay.
Because of the bridge that was put in, and I voted against it. And because of the bridge that was put in at 172nd and Ward, in that area, it is most likely, I'll admit, that is the appropriate classification because of how traffic has been funneled.
Okay.
That will be what it is. So you might as well make it that. I simply couldn't set up a compromise.
So there's history behind this, and some wish we could go back and change history, it sounds like, but we can't. So in order for us to be able to actually from here move forward, Steve, are you arriving at the conclusion that what they're recommending there to change that classification for that section, it really the only choice is to do what they're recommending for that particular section?
Based on the changes that have already been made to the roadway and how they've diverted traffic, yes.
Okay, then we're all on the same page for that section.
No.
One to go.
I think it was already mentioned. Ward Road carries 88% of the traffic today. When you get into Hawkinson, there's a stop sign, and the traffic is pretty much a standstill there at the school. Is that a rural center?
Yes, it's a rural center.
It makes sense, and it's true that the traffic is at a standstill, or very, very slow at that intersection. Mm-hmm. The controlled intersection is a business intersection. And they're not moving at 50 miles per hour, but 88% of the people choose to take that route because it's a more direct route. And we also need a north-south to think that we would expect people to use 172nd jog here and jog there just doesn't make good sense for moving traffic.
Yeah. They had an extension, a northbound extension from 172nd that actually worked, but they chose not to do that part of it years ago.
So
you could get me on board is if you didn't have the same classification as you reached the rural center, the road classification should change. We've talked about it before, that the road classification sets the expectation for the size and speed of the roadway. That is what it does. And so as you approach a school, not just a school, an elementary school, and several small businesses at a tiny intersection that, like you said, has a stop sign right now, and you're funneling more and more and more traffic through that little intersection, creating more hazards for those kids, before some kid gets hit by a car flying through the intersection, we may want to actually address the classification in the rural center is something different than this major collector that the rest of the ward would be. That would be my suggestion.
So we've We lowered the speed limit at Dollar's Corner, for example. That's what you're talking about.
It's something like that. Basically, this is just road classification, but the road classification sets the expectation for the speed limit and ultimately the capacity when it's lowered.
Everything out there is 15 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm. I think it comes down as you get into the rural center. It comes down to
30, yeah. 35, and then to 20.
Yeah. But you're going to have to redo that intersection no matter what. I mean, at some point, you can't keep funneling more and more traffic through that intersection. You know that intersection. You're going to have to redo the intersection. So the question is, how do you redo it? What's it going to look like? Which businesses are you going to erase? Because you don't have a lot of room on either side. So you're going to erase the Minibar on the southwest side? You're going to erase the school?
We're not going to make it a four-lane highway.
That's the question. That is the question.
Maybe maybe 20, 30 years from now we might. But I think right now it carries a lot of cars. It carries the majority of the cars. It'd be a shame not to be able to accept federal dollars or state dollars to make it a safer road.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the classification is good and it's adjustments along the way, but I also agree with you on 172nd. As you go farther north, you change classification from 172nd. For example, once you get past the park, ballpark, from there north, you go to a different rural classification.
Well, they're basically there's lower the capacity of 172nd in the classification.
So where are you on this?
Well, I'm just there's multiple legs on there, and I think what I'd like to be able to do is to spend time one-on-one time with staff, because you have a lot more history and knowledge of this, and I don't. So I need to get up to speed on this. So rather than consume time here to do that, I need to get educated.
Probably the less controversial issue would be deleting this future, which is already precluded. Yeah.
That's already.
Yes. Making this little length urban since it's near the growth boundary.
Yes.
And then changing this length from 88th Street up to the bridge to a minor arterial.
To an urban class.
To a three lane minor arterial. Currently it's designated 5 lane. We don't see it ever being widened north of 88th Street. So I think those are the issues on that. Okay. The rest of these should be a lot easier. 36th Lakeshore. Basically, we eliminated the PR 2CD last year because a three-lane road doesn't function as a principal arterial, so we're proposing to call this minor arterial and 2CD, basically reflecting the current cross-section. Easy vote is 6-0 for that. 899th Street, same kind of issue. There's a little section that is from here to here that's designated M or something that doesn't exist anymore. We're just proposing to reflect the existing 5-lane arterial section.
Just out of curiosity, so we had a couple of 6-0 votes. Earlier it was 4-0, or were these dealt with in two different planning commission hearings?
Yes.
Okay, that's not.
No,
right.
No,
we didn't have people abstaining or anything.
No, there's three separate planning commission hearings.
Three separate.
These all were about 2-minute hearings.
Got it.
This one is just to recognize that 139th Street is this crossing is getting built now, so instead of a future, it's an existing, and to classify the rest of 139th Street as a.
And these, and just as for us as a board, because of the concurrency changes that we're talking about, these road classifications that we're choosing become so much more important than they may have been in the past, because it's the road classifications that develop the capacity, that, like, how close are we to 100%, so that drives our concurrency standard. So while it used to be, it didn't make a huge difference until you actually got to the development. Now they'll make a difference as to what our capital facilities plan looks like.
I got a question on that. When it comes to the road classification as it is already built, or the road classification as it's planned and sometime in the future built, which do we use?
The second. Because when we look at it, we're saying we have a 20-year plan, and we're saying within that 20-year horizon, we expect that the area that has been planned for will build out. And we'll build out to the road classifications and the land uses and everything that have been planned for. So you're building to the capacity of that, just as you would with the land use.
Okay.
So, commissioners, that summarizes the cases that went before the planning commission that will be coming before you in two hearings. Mm-hmm. We will continue to refine the DA relating to Field Plain Creek. Hopefully, because it is October 8th, you will see the final version before your hearing. That's all we have.
Thank you.
Great work.
And I assume that this is available online. It's been our practice over the last couple of months for all of the work session materials, staff reports, any presentations, the audios, to be posted on our grid so that anybody in the community can get to it, as well as us, when we refer back to what was that conversation.
Can you work with Mark and Mary on that?
Yes.
Thank you.
So I might add on the 5th, what's called?
The 5th by Creek?
Yes. Something like that. Are we on a time frame with that? Are we trying to get that in this October window?
Once a year.
Because we do it once a year, we want to be able to conclude all the cases heard this year.
And the reason I asked the question is because we have to conclude what our work session was on concurrency. And in this case here, it can make a difference as to whether or not it is removed from holding or not. And so my question, I guess Mark would be, maybe somebody else would tell me, when are we going to address the concurrency or make a decision on the things that we talked about during the work session to address concurrency on our policy? I think that the board is pretty much in agreement as to address and change policy on concurrency to a two-hour window. We have not officially done it, but in the case of this holding decision, that based on that, that maybe we can make the decision to go forward, and by the time it's officially recognized that we will have already addressed the policy of concurrence.
But Mike, I know we directed staff to kind of be working on the changes necessary to accomplish concurrency. Do you have any sense of where we're at on that?
I hesitate to say we're one place or another, but we did meet with RTC staff, learned that they don't have a calibrated two-hour model. They don't use it for technical purposes. Probably not that critical because it won't make that big of a difference. In looking at the pros and cons of what we've put before you, a volume to capacity measure, there are some negatives to it that we had not foreseen. And at any rate, the measures that we're talking about changing in terms of concurrency are really the links between intersections. Won't give you any kind of, it won't really change the outcome of 182nd and 500, for instance, or Ward Road.
Oh, wow, I just can't imagine.
Because the level of service measures for intersections will remain the same.
Well, I know, but it would be in a two-hour window instead of a one-hour window. So, and so that's why I was hoping that Steve Schulte would have provided us with some information of showing the difference.
We'll find out. We'll find out where Mark, has it on his list to find out where we are with the changes that we have recommended, but have to move forward with. And then as far as the developer agreement, you already said it, I think, right, in that if we do the developer agreement this year, the development itself won't occur for a year or two. The changes will have, that we will be making in concurrency will have been done by then. So if you anticipate those and include that within the developer agreement, then we should still be able to accomplish what you're
doing. That's what I was hoping. It's a way to not delaying something.
What's going to be helpful for the board is, this morning I got back at the working city on the TIF.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, so I sent you guys a letter from Matt Ransom of the city saying they are willing to give the county the TIF money from the TIF Plain Creek area. And it's Mike and I had this conversation as I think both of us read the letter on its face, it's all of the money, not even enough to fund these two improvements.
Yeah.
Mike's clarifying that with city staff, but the agreement that's drafted right now doesn't specifically identify improvements. What it does is it conditions the agreement conditions development upon you guys actually getting the money, you guys getting the change in the capital facilities plan. You guys can then decide if you amend the concurrency ordinance and that changes what you need or what you want, you'll have the flexibility to do that because you'll have the money, and then you can, you know, at that time you can decide what you want to do.
Decide where to put it.
Right. So that's at least where we're currently at.
So Shelby's out till Monday. Why don't we just schedule for more time and update on concurrency for next Wednesday?
That sounds good.
That'd be great.
Mark, can we? Yeah. All right, we'll put it on the board time for next week. Good idea. Excellent. All right, anything else on this?
No.
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate
it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Nice work.